Can you take us through what an outline for a periodization year would look like?
Yeah, definitely. Now, I'll tell you what, one of the hardest things I've had to do so far in my short career at this point is to try to build a high school strength and conditioning program from the ground up, especially from a programming standpoint, because there's a lot of variables involved as far as class schedules, multi-sport athletes that jump in and out of the program, having optional points in the year. So for me, periodization wasn't necessarily the biggest focal point per se. And the reason I say that is there's a lot of unloading as the year goes on. So there's a lot of times where the athletes actually aren't getting as much stress as you would probably need to worry about making sure that the programming, the sets and reps and everything is right on point. Because, you know, from a periodization standpoint, we're trying to manage stress. We're trying to develop certain qualities and make sure that we do so correctly throughout a competitive year. It's not to say that we don't, you know, I didn't plan at all. I certainly had a program, but for me, it was more about building relative strength first, then taking that and just trying to develop that strength further, and then eventually try to transfer that to power. But it wasn't necessarily the sets and reps that were the overarching theme and what drove the program. It was more about layering progressions and regressions. So taking the program and at any point being able to, if an athlete gets transferred into your fourth period class 6 weeks into the semester, being able to take them, place them in within the program, and then layer a progression or regression for them so that they're able to complete the same movements as everybody else in the classroom so they don't feel ostracized, but at the same time, bringing it back down to their level. So I'll say that having an opportunity to go further, had I been there going into a second year or if I returned to the high school level, there's so many things I've learned from that first year that first year for me was developmental. It was block zero for almost everybody, and it was an entire year. Whether you were a freshman or a senior, most were just learning to move and move well. Most were just trying to load through those proper movements and get as strong as possible in those sound movement patterns, and then develop strength develop more power through that. And then as the years would have gone by, being able to then layer that program out and have different tiers for athletes who advance and progress and be able to maybe do some more actual advanced programming, if you will.
You mentioned on Twitter a little while back that you were going towards simplicity more. Did this come out of that process?
Absolutely. And already from past experience, just working as a high school baseball coach who trained the baseball team throughout college, while I was in college, you learn that these young athletes, they're so adaptable, especially from a nervous system standpoint. So they have this great window for adaptation. And that's why, like, you could walk into, and I'm sure you remember from being possibly in high school and possibly having maybe not the best strength program or weightlifting classes, but dang, you know, either way, you got stronger. And it may have not been the safest. You may have not moved the best, but at the end of the day, you still got stronger. The same thing could be said for most 14 to 18 year olds. They develop, especially early on when they first start training, they develop so quickly and they adapt. They're so ripe for adaptation that really whatever you throw at them, they're going to progress. But the simplicity, so that's the simplicity of the programming standpoint. But then let's just take that time, since we know they're going to adapt either way, they're going to get stronger. Let's take that time to kill as many birds as possible with one stone. And so let's teach them how to move properly. And if we can do that, if they can move well on top of getting stronger, now we're really accomplishing more than just, you know, your average program. We're actually doing more. We're basically teaching, we're having improving movement literacy and then getting them stronger throughout the process. So for me, it was, yeah, let's keep it simple. Let's just progress and regress movements as needed. Let's start them from the bottom, build them up. And then hopefully by the end of the first 9 weeks, they're ready for a little bit more of an advanced programming. But really, even from a sets and reps standpoint, it can be pretty basic for a whole year, and they're still going to see adaptation.
So really, you're just trying to get the fundamental exercises down and then progress from there?
Absolutely. Yeah, it makes it sound so simple. And maybe it was too simplistic of a model. And like I said, with an opportunity to go back to the high school level maybe one day, there might be some more advanced programming or things that I do. But at the same time, I saw success from a movement standpoint and a strength standpoint in doing what we did. So we can only get better. I only hope that my programming can get better with the kids. But just knowing that we were able to develop movement and get stronger was plenty for me.
And so you mentioned earlier that you may have kids coming in and out of classes throughout the year. So say you get a new kid in the new 6 weeks, and what is your process in dealing with what that player needs to work on versus what in the team setting? And so do you have some absolutes that everybody does and then you individualize from there, or how does that work?
Yeah, definitely. I think that's the best way to look at it. So kind of just bucketing everybody. So starting with a giant funnel almost, if you will, and bringing everybody into the program and knowing that no matter what, they're going to need to learn my staple movements or our staple movements. And then taking those movements and as I carefully watch them, knowing what their individual needs are. But I'll tell you what, when you get a kid that's 14 years old, a lot of them need the same things. We see the same common issues. Not to say that some don't, you know, there aren't a certain percentage that fall out of that. There are plenty that do, but the majority need a lot of the same things. They need to learn to move better. They need core stability. They need to learn what proper posture is, not only just standing statically, but they need to know how to then take that posture when it is sufficient and then make it more dynamic. They need to learn how to move their body in space. Most of them have problems or have difficulty differentiating between a squat and then a hip hinge and what the pelvis and the lumbopelvic region is doing. So what the lower back and the hips are doing. So if we could teach those things early on and then over the course of, say, 6 weeks. So for me, that was two cycles because we went in 3 week cycles. At the end of 6 weeks, I'd have a pretty good idea then if that individual needs something more specific than that.
A complete guess here, but most of the listeners don't have a strength and conditioning coach. Is there a way that you can try and convey this and just being a coach and being able to do this? Is it accomplishable?
I think so, yeah. But I think it's more about at that point just stepping back and not trying to do too much. So if I was to take a high school coach and say, look, so you're a high school baseball coach, you're trying to develop your own strength program. Let's make this as streamlined as possible. Okay. Understand that you probably either don't have a strength training program in place right now at all, or it's probably something that you did the best you possibly could to come up with, but you know, there's some areas that we can improve upon. So let's just go ahead and just lay the foundation. What movements do you feel confident in teaching, and what do you think you can confidently teach to them? If you feel comfortable teaching a squat, then that's a movement I think we need to hammer. If you feel confident teaching a hinge, then we do that. If we can lunge, push, and pull, we have a pretty good program just right there. Start at the basics and then build up. If you can do those things, the sets and reps, all that is going to be very is going to have very marginal significance compared to the big building blocks that you can establish. So don't try to think too advanced or way out of the box. Just go with the meat and potatoes, and let's just teach your kids how to move. And you know your way of doing it doesn't have to be the same way as the way you know I would do it or any other strength coach would do it. Do it in the way that you feel comfortable and confident in that the kids can buy into, and do it with conviction. And as long as the kids are in a safe position, they're not risking injury, and you have a safe steady progression for them, then they'll be just fine. And you will see development. You will see progress.
Now let's talk about training with heavyweights versus training with lightweights and mini reps for forever. Baseball was said you don't need to get big. You lift heavy weights, you're gonna get big and bulky and whatnot. And now it's coming in. New research is talking about it being a power sport, and it's very short bursts of very heavy movements. Now, what are your thoughts behind that?
That's exactly the stigma that I grew up in. So even when I was cut from the JV team my freshman year, like I said, and I went in and trained, I followed the same stigma and believed in just like everybody else that we can't get big and bulky or that we're going to get big and bulky if we lift. So got to go high reps and pitchers shouldn't squat and things like that. So obviously I think some better information has gotten out to most of the population by now. Still, yeah, I think it's vital to understand that baseball is a power sport. It's driven by power. So whether it's the actual speed of your swing and exit velocity that we're trying to achieve, or whether it's how fast we're throwing a baseball, the more force that we can put into the ground and then transfer through the rest of the body and then put out through whatever implement that we're using, whether it's a bat or a ball, the more likely we are to be able to actually exert power on those objects. So really, to break it down, the stronger we are, the more potential we have to produce power. So building strength, and then ultimately, you know, there are a lot of factors that determine strength and power, but muscle mass, the bigger a muscle is, the more potential it also has to produce strength. And then ultimately that's the more potential to produce power. So not that we want bodybuilder size baseball players, but if we have nice, big, strong legs and we're able to transfer that effectively through the core, through the trunk, and then out the hand, and we can do so safely and effectively, we're probably going to have better performance from that standpoint. So I think strength and conditioning is a major piece, especially at the younger ages. It's a major piece of development that can certainly help a baseball player progress very quickly if they haven't done it before, if they're new to training, and if done right can certainly aid in performance.
From the past, pitchers weren't supposed to lift upper body. Now, I'm looking at pictures of Aroldis Chapman and going, yeah, this dude throws 105 miles an hour, and he is like hundreds on the bench with 100 dumbbells, and then his arms are just jacked. Now, is there a happy medium there? You don't want to, I mean, does that even matter?
Upper body strength certainly matters. So you got to understand that the pecs or the chest, is it internally rotates the shoulder, okay, and as does the lat, which is the big muscle in the back. So those are your two, essentially what we would call prime movers for the shoulder going into internal rotation, and that's throwing a baseball. So when the arm is rotating in that direction, we're internally rotating. So to do that, you need to have strength in those muscles. At the same time, that's not where we're generating the majority of our strength and the majority of our power. That's coming from the lower half. So, well, absolutely, upper body strength is important. I think, especially for the reduction of injuries, if we can try to prevent injuries by having a strong upper half, that's incredibly important. At the same time, the lower body is just important. It's just as important, and so is the trunk and the core. So, really, what it boils down to is developing the entire body. So, I like the quote that the shoulder starts at the feet. I wish I could tell you where that one specifically came from, and I could cite that source, but you know, we got to start at the ground. We got to start with the lower half. This, from a force standpoint and a power standpoint, that's where it all starts. We need to be able to transfer it through the trunk and through the core, and then we need to be able to safely transfer that and have it actually come out of the hand. So that, yeah, of course, the upper body can add to that, but it's more about being safe. It's more about making sure that we can decelerate the arm. So upper body strength certainly is important. Everybody's going to do it a little bit differently. There's certainly people in our profession that have, I mean, there's those that do Olympic lifting. There's those that don't do Olympic lifting, those that lift heavy, those that throw weighted baseballs. Everybody's a little bit different. There's different ways to get the job accomplished. But at the end of the day, if you're developing the entire body, you're probably going to be in good shape.